This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine the ancient Romans for a second.
Okay.
I mean, for centuries, they were just this relatively small city-state, right? But slowly, methodically, they conquered the Italian peninsula.
Right.
They defeated Carthage, they absorbed Greece and Egypt. And only then, after generations of strategy and bloodshed, could they finally stand on the shores of the Mediterranean, look out of the water, and declare it Mare Nostrum, our sea.
It's the ultimate image of total conquest.
Exactly. And today, I'd argue, there's a guy who trades the Roman armor for his signature black leather jacket, who's attempting something remarkably similar.
A CEO of NVIDIA.
Yeah, Jensen Huang. Because he conquered the small pond of gaming graphics, right?
Yeah.
Then he crossed the rushing river of scientific computing. And most recently, he basically traversed the absolute ocean of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, he really did.
But he isn't stopping at the water's edge. He's looking past the ocean now. He is trying to conquer physical reality itself. So welcome to the Deep Dive.
Thank you.
Today, our mission for you, the listener, is to unpack Chapter 11 of the book, Jensen Huang, Caesar of Silicon. The chapter is called The Advent of Physical AI.
It's a great chapter, and I think it perfectly frames the stakes of what we are looking at.
Yeah.
We aren't talking about a software update here or, you know, a faster app on your phone.
Right.
We are talking about a civilizational shift, the advent of physical AI. Because right now, society has this massive obsession with AI systems that generate text or paint award-winning pictures, create hyper-realistic videos.
That's stuff everyone's playing with online.
Exactly. And they are undeniably brilliant. But fundamentally, they are ghosts trapped in a world of bits.
A ghost in a world of bits. Just think about the reality of that for a second.
Yeah.
You could have the most advanced trillion-parameter artificial intelligence running on your laptop right now.
Sure.
You can verbally ask it to go to the kitchen and make you a cup of coffee,
yeah,
and absolutely nothing will happen.
Right.
Because it doesn't have hands. It doesn't have feet, eyes, skin. A ghost can't turn a doorknob.
That limitation is the crucial starting point, I think. To understand where this technology is heading, you really have to understand the hard boundaries of where it currently sits.
Yeah.
Screen-based artificial intelligence, no matter how clever it appears, is fundamentally disconnected from the physical universe we inhabit.
If you really want to see the limits of current AI, try the apple peeling paradox.
Oh, this is a great example from the text.
It really is. So if you pull up a chatbot right now and ask, how do I peel an apple?
Yeah.
It gives you a flawless response. It tells you the exact angle to hold the knife, the direction to pull the blade, how to avoid the core.
Sounds like a master chef.
Right. But if you were to somehow wire that AI into a robotic arm and hand it a real paring knife and a real Honeycrisp apple, it would fail catastrophically.
Totally. And the text explains exactly why it fails. It's because the AI only understands the statistical probabilistic relationship between the text string apple and the verb peel.
Right, just the word.
Just the words. It knows that in human language, those words frequently appear next to each other. What it completely lacks is an understanding of actual physics.
Because it hasn't lived it.
Exactly. It doesn't comprehend the slick, waxy slipperiness of the apple's skin.
Yeah.
It doesn't understand the physical resistance of the blade pushing against the fruit or, you know, that sudden snap when the skin finally breaks.
Right.
It doesn't know friction or gravity or inertia. It only knows the word. It does not know the world.
Which, okay, let's unpack this. That makes me think of object permanence in toddlers.
Oh, yeah.
If a ball rolls under a sofa, a human baby quickly learns the ball is still there, just hidden in the shadows. But if you take a massive large language model, a system that has practically read the entire internet, and simulate that exact scenario, the AI might conclude the ball literally ceased to exist.
Just because it's no longer visible in its data feed?
Right. It lacks a baseline intuition for physical reality. So how on earth do we bridge that massive chasm? I mean, how do we take an AI that just predicts the next word in a sentence and teach it Newton's laws of motion?
Well, you do it in stages. The overarching roadmap for this evolution, according to the source material, unfolds in three distinct waves.
Okay.
The first wave was perception. That was the era of computers learning to see and hear, basically, simple image recognition, transcribing speech to text.
Sure, we've had that for a while.
Right. And then the second wave is generation. That is the era we are currently living in, where AI creates new text, art, and video from simple prompts.
The era of the ghosts in the machine.
Exactly. But the third wave, and this is the focus of the chapter, is physical action. This is where AI uses sensors to perceive a real environment, an onboard brain to make judgments, and physical limbs to intervene.
Wow.
And the reason this matters, The reason it's described as a civilizational shift comes down to pure economics.
That's it.
Because the digital revolution of the last 30 or 40 years happened almost entirely on office desks. It changed how we type documents, how we route emails, crunch spreadsheets.
Well, it's at work.
Right. But the actual economy, factories, hospitals, construction sites, agricultural fields that runs on physical labor. So physical AI is about bringing the intelligence revolution into the heavy, messy physical economy.
Which sounds incredibly lucrative, obviously. But I keep getting stuck on the safety aspect of this.
Yeah, it's a huge concern.
Because if the goal is physical intervention, how do you actually build a brain that understands the physical world without risking absolute catastrophe? You can't just let a 2-ton robotic forklift stumble around a busy warehouse trying to figure out how gravity works through trial and error, right?
No, of course not.
People would get crushed.
You absolutely cannot do that. You need an environment where failure is free. And this is why NVIDIA developed an incredibly elegant 3-computer architecture to make physical AI a reality safely.
Okay, break that down for us.
You basically need 3 distinct systems working in tandem. First, the supercomputer. These are massive server farms filled with chips processing astronomical amounts of data to form the AI's baseline intelligence.
A heavy lifter.
Right. Second, the simulation computer. This provides a hyper-realistic virtual testing ground. And third, the edge computer.
And that's the one inside the robot.
Yes. It's a small, highly efficient chip placed physically inside the machine to act as its localized brain.
You know, the bridge between that supercomputer and the edge computer is what completely blew my mind when reading this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always wondered how you translate abstract intelligence into physical movement. Like, how does a thought become a moving arm?
Mm-hmm.
It turns out, to a computer architecture, there is fundamentally no difference between writing a Shakespearean sonnet and moving a hydraulic piston.
It's all the same to the machine.
Exactly. It all gets converted into the same mathematical currency tokens.
This is such a crucial breakthrough to understand. The underlying technology behind things like ChatGPT is called a transformer model. And a transformer is fundamentally just an incredibly powerful sequence predictor. It looks at a sequence of tokens, which for a chatbot are just pieces of words, and predicts the next logical token. What engineers realized is that physics is also just a sequence.
Ah, right. So you tell the AI, move the blue box to the red shelf, and it processes that intent. But instead of predicting the next English word, it predicts the next joint angle.
Precisely.
It outputs motor torque and hydraulic force as its tokens. It's literally using language math to speak the language of physics.
It translates intent into physics, token by token. But for that sequence prediction to be accurate without destroying a multi-million-dollar robot in the real world, the AI needs practice.
A lot of practice.
A staggering amount of practice.
Which brings us back to the Romans, actually.
Okay, I like this.
Because Roman legions were formidable, not just because of their armor or their tactics, but because of their relentless, ultra-realistic training. They practiced with wooden swords that were twice as heavy as their real steel weapons.
Wow, really?
Yeah. They trained so hard in simulation, basically, that actual warfare felt like a relief.
Yeah.
But if you try to train a modern robot in physical reality, it's dangerous, it's slow, and it is insanely expensive.
Right.
If robot has to fall down 1,000,000 times to learn how to keep its balance on gravel, the hardware is going to be pulverized before it ever takes a successful step.
And that is exactly where the second computer in that 3-part architecture becomes the most important piece of the puzzle, the simulation computer.
The virtual training ground.
Right. It runs a platform called Omniverse. Now, it is very tempting for people to hear simulation and picture, you know, a high-end 3D video game.
It's like a fancy video game engine.
Yeah. But Omniverse is much more profound than that. It is a digital twin of Earth, completely governed by actual physics. It utilizes a physics engine called Newton that calculates solid object collisions, soft body deformations.
Wait, soft body deformation?
Yeah, like how a couch cushion yields when you press a heavy box into it. It simulates that. Along with fluid dynamics and even tactile feedback, all in real time.
The soft body deformation is key because the real world isn't just made of rigid polygons.
Exactly.
But here's where it gets really interesting. It's what they are doing inside that simulation with a model called Cosmos.
Oh, Cosmos is fascinating.
But the best way to describe Cosmos is that it gives robots the ability to dream. Just like you and I consolidate our memories and learn by dreaming at night, Cosmos lets robots do the exact same thing with physical tasks.
It's an incredible concept.
A human developer can show a virtual robot how to pick up a coffee cup just one single time. And then Cosmos takes that one demonstration and hallucinates tens of thousands of synthetic scenarios.
It tests all the edge cases.
Yeah. It dreams about picking up the cup in dim lighting, or, you know, if the floor is suddenly covered in oil, or if the cup is made of lead instead of ceramic.
It's an ingenious solution to a very specific, massive bottleneck in AI development, which is the data shortage.
Right, because we don't have text for that.
Exactly. The internet is overflowing with text.
Yeah.
We have centuries of books, articles, and forums to train language models. But the internet does not contain data on the micro-adjustments of torque required for a bipedal robot to lift a heavy box while walking on an uneven surface.
No one writes that down.
No. So by allowing the robot to dream in a physically accurate simulation, they are artificially manufacturing the synthetic data required to train the physical AI. The robot basically learns to be a robot in a virtual school.
So it falls down a million times in the matrix where it costs nothing.
Right.
But eventually school is out, right?
Right.
What happens when that simulated brain is actually downloaded into a metal body and takes its first steps in our messy, unpredictable real world? Does it actually work?
It really does.
Yeah, look at the little BDX robot from Disney Research mentioned in the book. They put this little bipedal robot through absolute hell in the Omniverse. It failed and fell countless times virtually.
Yeah.
But when they finally loaded that trained neural network into the physical BDX robot and set it on the ground, it walked perfectly on its very first try.
It's amazing.
It moved like a seasoned veteran who had been walking for years, despite never having taken a real physical step.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the industry term for this leap is sim to real, simulation to reality. And it's not just happening with small, single robots like the BDX.
What's the scale looking like?
The scale is completely industrial. Massive global manufacturers, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, Foxconn, they are utilizing this sim-to-real pipeline right now. Before they pour a single ounce of real concrete for a new factory, they build a complete digital twin of that entire facility inside the Omniverse.
Oh, wow. The whole factory.
The whole thing. They simulate the exact physics of the conveyor belts, the lighting, the robots, the human workers. They run thousands of virtual robots through the assembly lines to test workflows, find bottlenecks, and prevent collisions.
That's wild.
The vision here is that future factories will exist in pairs, a digital factory producing the intelligence and a physical factory producing the actual goods.
Okay, I have to push back here, though.
Sure, go ahead.
Because I totally understand simulating a robotic arm in a car factory. That makes sense. But looking at the broader robotics landscape in this chapter, there is this sudden massive obsession with humanoids.
Yes, there is.
Robots that look exactly like us, two arms, two legs, a torso, a head.
Mm.
Why? I mean, wouldn't a warehouse robot on tank treads with six telescoping arms be infinitely more efficient than a metal man trying to balance on two feet?
That's a great question. And if you were building a factory from scratch on an empty patch of dirt, yes, wheels and specialized arms are much more efficient.
Right.
But the world isn't a blank slate. Look around your home or your office or the street outside right now. The height of a stair step, the shape and rotational torque of a doorknob, the grip of a power drill, the width of a hallway.
Oh, I see.
Our entire built environment has been meticulously designed over thousands of years for one specific biological form, the human body.
Ah. So if you build a robot on treads, it can't climb the stairs to deliver medicine in a hospital.
Exactly. If you build it with clamps instead of multi-jointed fingers, it can't use our existing tools. Humanoids are considered the ultimate form of physical AI because they are the ultimate general purpose form factor.
They just fit right in.
They can be dropped seamlessly into our existing society without us having to spend trillions of dollars redesigning our architecture to accommodate them. And this is the logic driving major initiatives like NVIDIA's project GR00T.
Right, the foundation model.
Yeah, it's an open source foundation model specifically designed to act as the brain for humanoids being built by companies like Figure AI, Boston Dynamics, and Agility Robotics.
And the hardware they are packing into these humanoids to make them interact with our world is staggering. Think about our own sense of touch for a second.
Okay.
Human fingers have a sensory resolution of about 2.8 to 3.5 millimeters. That's how close 2 points of pressure can be before our biological skin just registers them as a single point.
That's pretty sensitive.
It is. But the newest tactile sensors being equipped on the fingertips of these humanoid robots have a precision of 30 to 100 micrometers.
Wow. That's a massive difference.
We are talking about robots walking out of the lab with a sense of touch that is vastly more delicate and sensitive than our own. They could theoretically feel the microscopic grooves in a piece of metal.
It is a profound leap in sensory capability, but we also have to recognize that this wave of physical AI extends far beyond walking humanoids. The stated vision in the text is much broader. Eventually, everything that moves will be autonomous.
Right, the most obvious example being cars. Cars are rapidly becoming essentially just wheeled robots.
Exactly.
Look at the 2025 Alpamayo models mentioned in the source. They use what's called an end-to-end learning AI.
And let's define what end-to-end actually means in this context, because it's a major shift from how things used to be done.
Sure.
Historically, autonomous driving relied on thousands of lines of human-written code. Engineers would literally program rules like, if you see a red octagon, that is a stop sign, therefore apply the brakes.
Hard-coded rules.
Right. End-to-end learning throws all those rigid rules out the window. A neural network takes in raw pixels from the car's cameras and translates them directly into steering and braking commands, entirely based on massive amounts of driving data it has internalized.
So there's no middleman. It just looks at the world and reacts, much like a human driver does.
Exactly.
But what makes this specific system incredible isn't just that it drives well. It actually explains its reasoning out loud to the passengers.
Yes.
It will literally tell you, I am slowing down because the car, three vehicles ahead, just tapped its brakes, and I can see a shadow indicating a pedestrian might be approaching the crosswalk.
Which solves one of the biggest hurdles in AI, the black box problem.
Yeah, where you don't know why it did something.
For years, autonomous vehicles would make sudden, jarring decisions like slamming on the brakes on an empty highway, and the engineers couldn't figure out why the neural network did it. By forcing the AI to verbally narrate its physical logic in real time, it builds the trust necessary for mass adoption.
That makes total sense.
And this autonomy isn't theoretical, you know. It is deploying across critical sectors right now. Amazon's logistics network is already operating with over 1 million autonomous robots.
1 million?
Yeah. And in hospitals, surgical robots powered by these new AI models are boosting surgical precision by 40% and cutting patient recovery times by 15%.
Okay, so what does this all mean for us, for you, the listener? I mean, we have to talk about the human element here.
We do.
It's easy to get swept up in the sci-fi cool factor of a talking car or a robot surgeon.
Mm.
But if physical labor is automated, what happens to the laborers? Across developed nations, we are facing a stark demographic reality, shrinking labor forces and rapidly aging populations. There simply aren't enough young people entering the workforce to support the aging demographic.
It is an incredibly complex socioeconomic intersection, and the text provides two primary perspectives on this disruption, which we should present impartially.
Right. Let's look at both sides.
One perspective argues that because of this demographic collapse, these robots are not just cool tech, they are necessary partners. The argument is that we absolutely need physical AI to take over dangerous, physically degrading, and highly repetitive tasks just to keep the baseline economy functioning.
But the other perspective points to massive, painful disruption.
Yes. Economic forecasts warn that hundreds of millions of workers globally could be displaced by the end of the decade. The analysis points to a brutal, diverging reality. Low-skilled workers whose physical labor is abruptly automated will struggle significantly to find equivalent employment.
While the tech sector booms.
Conversely, high-skilled workers, the people who learn to direct, repair, and manage fleets of these autonomous systems, will see their productivity and their careers massively augmented.
It's a huge divide. And beyond the economic displacement, there is a literal, immediate physical safety aspect, too.
Definitely.
If a chatbot makes a mistake, it hallucinated a weird historical fact or wrote a bad poem. If physical AI makes a mistake, a two-ton machine swings the wrong way and someone gets crushed.
And this is the core ethical and technical hurdle facing the entire industry. It all revolves around something called the sim-to-real gap.
The gap between the simulation and reality.
Exactly. We talked about how incredible Omniverse is, but a simulation, no matter how good, is still a mathematical model. Reality is infinitely messy.
Right.
A sudden glare of sunlight blinding a camera, a bizarre, unmapped texture on a floor, an unpredictable toddler running into a workspace. These edge cases are where the gap between simulation and reality becomes lethal. There are already documented reports of industrial accidents, ranging from minor incidents like a robot failing to parse a chaotic environment and stepping on a person's foot, to much more severe industrial collisions.
So how do you solve for the chaos of the real world if you can't perfectly simulate it?
engineers are throwing massive resources at a technique called domain adaptation. Think of it almost like putting a heavy visual filter over a camera. During the training phase inside the simulation, engineers intentionally scramble the environment.
They mess it up on purpose.
Yeah, they add extreme digital noise, they randomly alter lighting, they change the colors and textures of objects, they make the virtual world look like a glitchy nightmare.
But why on earth would you make the training data worse?
Because it forces the robot's brain to ignore visual distractions and focus purely on the fundamental physics and geometry of the task.
Well, that's clever.
If a robot can successfully pick up a box when the simulation looks like a static-filled kaleidoscope, it is far less likely to be confused by a weird shadow or a scuffed floor in the real world. But closing that gap entirely remains a massive technical mountain to climb.
Stepping back and looking at the sheer scale of everything we've discussed today, the supercomputers, the Omniverse, the humanoids, the autonomous cars, what I find most staggering is the realization that none of this was an accident.
No, it was very deliberate.
Jensen Huang didn't just wake up during the ChatGPT boom and decide to pivot to robots. He started building robotic edge computers and physics simulators nearly a decade ago, back when the rest of the tech world thought AI was just going to be a fun novelty on a screen. He essentially laid the digital Roman roads of the future, patiently waiting for the day when all moving machines would need to run on his infrastructure.
It requires a profound, almost contradictory mindset to orchestrate a pivot that massive. Huang's driving philosophy, which he frequently repeats to his company, is we are 30 days away from going out of business.
Wow. That's intense.
It is this intense blend of profound humility and paranoid desperation that pushed him to look beyond the immediate massive success of screen-based AI chips. He understood that to truly secure the future of his company and perhaps the future of computing itself, he had to pull intelligence out of the screen and force it to grapple with the mud and friction of the real world.
It's amazing.
We're not just witnessing a tech upgrade. We are witnessing a fundamental change in the very nature of how humanity coexists with its tools.
A true civilizational shift. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the dawn of physical AI. But before you, our listener, take off your headphones, I want to leave you with one final thought to chew on.
Oh, I like these.
We talked earlier about why they're building humanoids. They're doing it because our physical world, the stairs in our homes, the handles on our doors, the driver's seats in our cars, is perfectly tailored to the human body.
Right.
It makes perfect sense to build a robot that fits our world. But, you know, as these physical AIs become our ubiquitous partners in factories, in hospitals, and eventually in our living rooms, as they become faster, stronger, and more integral to our survival, how long will it be before we stop forcing them to adapt to our world and we start redesigning our architecture, our cities, and our physical reality to be perfectly tailored for them?
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.